this is a continuation of a lecture that I started last week, and that lecture was the rise of the Indus Valley Civilization. Toward the end of that lecture, I started talking about once the Aryans invaded the Indus Valley, they created a caste system, and that's really what I want to talk about today. The Aryans believed that both human beings and gods were part of a universal order. Class distinctions soon came to be seen as an important and unchangeable part of this order. Each class had its own dharma. A dharma is a code of conduct for its members. In this code of conduct spelled out the rights and the duties of membership in this particular grouping. As these rules grew more and more strict, the four main classes of Aryan society became castes, and a caste is a fixed social grouping. Now, in this photo that I have on this PowerPoint slide, you see a man in the 21st century, and he is actually a member of the bottommost tier of the caste system in India today. He's called an untouchable. I'm going to talk about untouchability on some of the last slides on this lecture. But his job, because of his caste, is to clean the sewers. So as you see him with all that grime on his body, he has been down in the sewer system in the various cities in India cleaning the sewers out. And that's why he's full of gunk. During the Vedic times, the family in the caste system was attributed to the gods. In fact, the Rig Veda, which was the first Aryan epic, attributed the caste system to the gods. And here's a little quote coming from the Rig Veda. And I talked about the Rig Veda in my lecture last week as well. When they divided the original man, into how many parts did they divide him? What was his mouth? What were his arms? What were his thighs and his feet called? The Brahmin was his mouth. Of his arms was made the warrior. His thighs became the Vaishya. Of his feet the Sudra was born. And I kind of talked about some of these entities last week. During the Vedic times, family units were clearly patriarchal, and women were conventionally seen as subjects to their parents, husbands, and male relatives. But depending on their caste, women did have some control over personal property, and a number of women even owned businesses. Women could not serve as priests, but they were free to become nuns, several of whom were notable poets and scholars. The Indian code of law recommended that a wife worship her husband as a god, and we'll go over some of the lines in a piece of poetry that talks about that. In the illustration I have on the slide, you see 21st century Indian women, and they're working in a rock quarry carrying rocks on their head. And that's because in the particular caste that they're born into requires that they do manual labor. One of the greatest epic poems of India was a Mahabharata, and it was 106,000 verses. It's the longest single piece of poetry in the world. And part of the poem extols the virtues of an Indian wife. And I just want to read you a little bit of a passage from this piece of poetry. The wife is half the man, the best of friends, the root of the three ends of life, and of all that will help him in the other world. With a wife, a man does mighty deeds. With a wife, a man finds courage. A wife is the safest refuge. A man aflame with sorrow in his soul or sick with disease finds comfort in his wife as a man parched with heat finds relief in water. Even a man in the grip of rage will not be harsh to a woman, remembering that on her depend the joys of life, happiness, and virtue. For a woman is the everlasting field in which the self is born. So that piece of poetry is considered a primary document. In the first week of class, we talked about what a primary document is. Using this very epic poetry, we really can tell a lot about Indian life. So what I want you to do, upload this in a Word document. I want you to tell me what you think this small small extraction from this longer poem what it really says to you about men, women, and their relationship in this Indian society. And let me read this one excerpt from this piece of poetry one more time. The wife is half the man, the best of friends, the root of the three ends of life, and of all that will help him in the other world. With a wife, a man does mighty deeds. With a wife, a man finds courage. A wife is the safest refuge. A man aflame with sorrow in his soul or sick with disease finds comfort in his wife, as a man parched with heat finds relief in water. Even a man in the grip of rage will not be harsh to a woman, remembering that on her depend the joys of life, happiness, and virtue. For a woman is the everlasting field in which the self is born. So, again, in a couple of sentences on a Microsoft Word document, just upload to me what kind of meaning, what kind of insight can we gain into the life of men and women in Indian society from this piece of poetry and their relationship together. Now, over thousands of years, the caste system in India became more complex. Hundreds of subcastes were formed within these castes, and they each had different customs. These subcastes were called Jati, J-A-T-I, and that's in your textbook. The customs and rules and regulations were quite detailed. They directed what people could eat, what jobs they could do, whom they could marry. It all revolved around the caste they were born into. One of the most important rules forbid associating with someone of a lower caste. Such contact was thought to bring spiritual pollution or uncleanliness. Though people of different castes had everyday business dealings, they really avoided each other on ritual occasions. And over time, this caste system would harden, and the rather loose arrangement of social inequality that we knew in the very early times of the Indus Valley civilization became hardened and life-determining by the latter stages of the Aryan conquest. Only the three highest castes were authorized to read the sacred text, for instance, the Vedas. In fact, the hero of an Indian epic was celebrated for cutting off the head of a peasant who read the Vedas while hanging upside down from a tree, because that peasant wasn't of the highest caste. So again, by the rule of the Aryan people, this caste system had become entrenched and really dictated life. The political culture of India was not very elaborate compared to the political system in China and the political system in ancient Greece and Rome. And remember, when I talk about political culture, political system, I'm talking about a complex institution, and that's one of the five key characteristics of a civilization. So Indian religion didn't really stress the importance of politics, even for religious purposes. Instead, in the Indian society, holy men and priests were the sources of all authority, and that's why they were at the top of the caste system, the holy men. So the religious system in India was well entrenched, and it really became the governing body. And that's why in the article that you read about present-day India and its caste system, that's why it's been so hard to abolish the lowest rung of the caste system, untouchability, because it permeates their religious life as well. Now, limitations on political traditions in India can be explained in part by the political qualities of social relationships under the caste system. The caste system was interpreted by priests, and it was regulated by the social relationships in people's work roles. The faithful performance of a caste duty basically promoted public order. So it really took the place of what a government would do. By the end of the Epic Age, and that was roughly, the Epic Age went from 1000 before the Common Era to 600 before the Common Era, there had been five initial castes that had been subdivided into 300 subcast of Jodi. It became virtually impossible to rise above the caste to which you were born. You could fall into a lower caste by marrying outside of your caste or doing work deemed inappropriate for your caste. But upward mobility could only occur within the caste itself. You couldn't actually go into a whole different level. So there is really no notion or thought in people's minds to try to better their situation in life, because you could not. The political consequences of the caste system is that the origins of the system really provided a way for India's various races to live together without full integration of cultures and values. The caste also promoted tolerance. The caste basically helped to prevent outright slavery. And we learned last week that in the early days of the takeover of the Indus Valley civilization by the Aryans, that the Aryan people made the Indus Valley people slaves. So the caste system really helped to prevent the outright owning of another individual. And the governing structure for the society pretty much came about because of the detailed rules for each caste. And what will happen in India is that no one state in India could command full loyalty from the subjects, because their first loyalty was always going to be to the caste. And that, again, once again, is why people had so much trouble to this day abolishing the notion of untouchability. And even though in 1955, the Indian Constitution put right into the Constitution that untouchability was abolished, it still exists, as you've learned from that article you've read. Religious and political leaders enforced the system as a primary duty, believing basically it was supernaturally ordained. Now, as I've touched on, and as you've read, if you've already started to read that article assigned for this week, the lowest rung of the caste system isn't even a part of the caste. It's the untouchables. And right here in this slide, I'm showing an image of two women. They are the untouchable group. And they live in the streets. This is their makeshift kitchen. You can see them cooking on in between in an alleyway. The outcasts were made up of new arrivals to Aryan society, or people who committed crimes or broke the dharma for their particular caste. The outcasts are thought of as the lowest of all members of society. They basically would have to ring a bell to warn people that they were coming. They lived on the fringes of society. They basically did jobs that caste members would not dream of doing, such as sweeping the streets, cleaning the dead, and cleaning the sewer system, as you saw in the first slide of this lecture. In the 6th century BC, ritual purity was so important to upper caste Indians that untouchables had to ring a bell to warn that they were coming near them. Even the shadow of an untouchable falling on an upper caste Hindu would contaminate them. That upper class person would have to bathe before worshiping or eating because they'd come across the shadow of an untouchable. In the 20th century, the Indian leader Mahatma Gandhi basically called the untouchables children of God. And through his efforts, caste distinctions were outlawed, as I said, by the Indian Constitution and the Untouchable Act of 1955. However, 3,000 years of tradition doesn't die easily. And the former untouchables in India today still suffer from extreme poverty and caste discrimination. Inroads have been made to make untouchables' lives better, but it's been a slow process.